ready for the interview. In a few, get a cue live on a laptop. Watch what I'm gonna do. Welcome to the show. Let them know we got a point of view. Hey, yo, let's have a combo. Say what you feel, be real. That's the motto. Real talk, pronto. Dr. D, PhD, hit an intro. Hold up, wait. Gotta be social, network, global, a home for the locals. Gotta be social, network, global, a home for the locals.
All right, Christina, it's been a long time coming, and very happy to have you here. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me here. I'm very much looking forward to our talk.
And thanks for listening to some previous episodes to kind of get a feel for it. Yeah.
Yes, yes. When you contacted me, I looked at your website and I thought, so cool, this human-centered, love-powered. I thought, oh, this is so nice. And I looked at some of the interviews and thought, yes, we will have a great chat, I'm sure.
Yeah, for sure. It was funny. I talked to a lot of people and I feel like a lot of people are kind of like down on other people. Like, because, you know, you see a lot of humanity and you're like, ah, it's a lot of bad going on. But I think there's a lot of great going on, too.
Yes.
You just have to get yourself out there and see it. But I thought this topic would be pretty interesting because it's kind of a different side of meditation. You know, I've talked to a lot of people meditation and all the wonderful benefits, but I think the other side's important to cover as well. So before we get into that, let's talk about your history with meditation, your journey into this area.
Yeah. This is how I came into the topic. Like many of us, we learn somehow through our own journeys. And I started meditating when I was like 19, quite a while back. Yeah, but it was like 20 years back. And then I loved yoga, and then somebody recommended these meditation retreats, these intense retreats where you go for 10 days of silence. And I got so much out of it. I felt like my life was fully transformed. It was one of those before and afters. I had like some issues, you know, like teenage, like I had an eating disorder at that time I was struggling with, and the meditation just really cleared it and it helped me make very good decisions. And so I really fell in love with it. I went on to have a master's degree in Buddhism. I was so into it, so much into learning all about it. And got so much more out of it also than other modalities. So like more than, you know, from therapy or things like that. So I was really in love with it. And it started to kind of shift. Like I had my daughter after like 6 years of being meditating, and I was under a lot of pressure. And then I thought meditation was the answer. So I just kept meditating. Then things got more intense. And then I thought, oh, I just need to meditate more, you know. And then, you know, it was really strange. I was going through a lot of anxiety. I'd go to the therapist and they're like, have you tried mindfulness and meditation? And I'd be like, I've done thousands of hours of this. And then, of course, it starts. The story was painful because then it's, oh, I must be so broken that even meditation, this amazing tool, is not working for me. So there's like a lot of shame involved. And so that was sort of the story. And that has led me into a beautiful journey of uncovering what happens in meditation, you know, how our systems react to it, what is beautiful about it, what can be really kind of tricky about it, and the ways to navigate that. That has become a topic just so rich. And I think nowadays, because so many people are meditating, you know, this is like a thing that, because it is very helpful. So it is good. But now that more and more people are doing it, I just feel like people need to know, because now through my story, I've gotten to know others. I've gotten to know through my clients, I hear it. And some people are getting more informed, but it's still a topic that it's not widely known. So, yeah, that's how I came into it.
Well, let's talk about the tricky part of meditation, because I think that's one of the things in presenting a different side to this. You know, I've had plenty of other evidence to the the positive aspect of it.
Yes, right?
The tricky part, I think people see meditation and think, oh, this is great. I am getting into this space, this sense of calm. But we don't talk about the potential negative pitfalls of meditation. So maybe talk a little bit more about that.
Yes, yes, that's really a good topic. And when I, you know, some people have asked me, what can go wrong? And I'm just thinking, I kind of think very little and very much, you know, it's sort of like
well said.
Both things, you know, most cases, you know, you listen to a little meditation, you'll just like feeling a little calm. But it is a really strong tool. It is you're like using your attention very intentionally to shift things. So it is like you're putting your attention and you're using your brain, you're using your nervous system, you're using your attentional capacities, and it can get very intense. So, you know, as I was thinking of our conversation, I thought it's a really great way to talk about it, because I know that you work, if I understood it, like as a personal trainer. And mm-hmm. I was thinking it's sort of similar in the sense if you practice too much or above your level, it can just be super harmful. And meditation, it's exactly that. It's a very, very strong exercise. I've seen just people with severe anxiety, panic, unfortunately, now that I've gotten more deeply into it, some cases of psychosis. It just can be so strong without the right guidance. So the way, exactly, like if I think of it as a type of exercise that has a direct impact on the brain, on the nervous system, we're usually trained, like when we meditate, there's many, many types of meditation. That's, you know, you can work with mantras, with sensations, mindfulness, all sorts of things, inquiry. But in most of them, students are asked to observe their inner experience. So that, like, to bring attention to their inner world, be it their sensations, their emotions, their thought, what is present within them. And then to bring a sense of equanimity, to observe it, even when things can be painful, but you sort of stay with it in presence. The idea being that there is a growing sense of acceptance that things will dissolve and shift. But looking at the inner world can also be super, super intense. And as you say very well, like there are all kinds of empirical studies of how great it is. It can help with sleep, with stress, anxiety, deep states of calm, but very few people are aware that it really has a very direct impact. So there's many, like, I don't think we really understand it fully, because I think one can take all scriptures and things, well, there's kind of some energetic shift going on and there's things moving inside you. That's one thing. But, you know, we also have modern science, which is a very helpful tool, I think, to look at things. And so the nervous system it's like when we're in pain and we focus on it, our nervous system will go like, hey, alert, like, let's get rid of the pain. Let's, like, you know, let's do something about it. And then it gets super activated. And we focus more on it and then it gets more activated. And then that can really crank up all this energy, all this pain. And unfortunately, this is where the issues, I think, really start, because that's not unusual. Like when you do an exercise, you tell someone, you know, you do whatever, some push-ups or whatever, and then they'll give you feedback. And sure, as you know, you sort of say, okay, adjust like this, let's do it this way, that way. But unfortunately, meditation, it's still the most common answer is just keep doing it. Just keep doing it. It will pass. You're just moving through your painful experiences, etc. And this could be, you know, it could be that some people it goes well, but for many, many cases, it just spirals into more and more balance when there is already that state. And, you know, I think recently I've been looking more into it, and it's, of course, more acute when people have a past history of trauma, etc. But the truth is, it also can happen to people who don't have a past history of mental health issues. It just can happen. And that, yeah, it's like we still really do need to know how to work with it. And I think so. One more thing is that the guidance that we get is so wrong. And then our inner confusion, because we don't know about it, it's like, if it worked before, it's going to work now. So like people with anxiety start meditating and it's like, okay, this felt good. So next time you get anxiety, it's like, ooh, I'm going to meditate. Oh, but now there's more. So let me meditate more, you know? And then the nervous system just goes into this high alert. And unfortunately, at first I thought, oh, maybe there's some random case, but more and more I'm reading, it can get so bad, so tragically bad, you know, psychosis, dissociation, just a state of very, very deep imbalance.
Why don't you think, at least in my observation, I have not heard of this really.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what you think of that, but why aren't we talking about this more? It feels like it's just the very kind of rose-colored picture of meditation that I see a lot. Mm-hmm.
Yes, this is such a deep question. My mind exploded into so many thoughts about it. I'm going to try to bring them. I think one of them is that meditation is a very ancient practice, but really it's only come to the West, you know, to industrialized societies. What can we say? Maybe 50, 60 years ago, give or take. And these are practices that in other countries have been around for really thousands of years. So yeah. we're just coming to terms with it. You know, we're just trying to find our way through it. I think that's one thing, that it's not really any ill-intentioned thing. It's just we are learning how to handle it. Another thing I observe, and this is where I think it can get tricky, is that these things come to our society, which is a very individualist society. So, you know, when you're giving meditation, the way I have seen it, like with the people I speak about in my clients, it's almost like, oh, I have less meditation. Now I don't need anybody. I don't need to, you know, I'm just going to sit down. I'm going to do it. I'm going to work through it. Great. I don't have to deal with interpersonal pain. I don't have to deal with the learning to trust others. And so I think many people think about it that way, get into trouble because it's like, I need to do it myself. And then there is this sense of shame that comes from society. Like, if I can't solve it myself, I'm very weak, etc. Which is a complete delusion. Because as humans, we need each other. This is not weak or strong. It's just the way we Homo sapiens are built, you know? And another thing, which is very subtle, but I think it's there, is that many people who start on this, they do get, strangely enough, hard to really describe, but in some kind of cultish mindset, you know, it's sort of like, I learned this teacher and they're so good, they're very saintly, whatever they say, it's great. And some of these teachers are so inspiring. I really have met wonderful teachers. It's some of them are not sectarian, they're not cultish, but we've lost the sense of looking into our own experience. So it sort of goes in that other direction where there is like, no, this teacher says this is the best thing to do. And then they must know, people who don't get it, they're just, you know, they had a bad karma, or they just, you know, they're just somehow influenced by bad energies. Like, who knows? But we start into some very crazy, dangerous mindsets. I think that, yeah, that's a big part of it. Not to mention mental health in general, that it's still a taboo. So that also fits into it, that people don't want to talk much about it. I mean, recently, not so recently, a few years ago, I read an article of a meditation teacher, a mindfulness teacher who committed suicide. And these things are very complex. You cannot say, oh, it was because of meditation. These are maybe this was a tool that helped him at times. But it was kind of said, like he didn't have a space to talk about it because it was almost like, it must then mean I'm a failure at meditation. If I talk about it, it means I failed in my spiritual path. So I think that, yeah, there's a lot to this topic.
That's well said. It makes me think of kind of the rise of, well, there's been kind of this very large exposure of the rise of the guru, of these different, I don't even know as sure whether it's different spiritual organizations and things of that nature, and the charismatic leader, this person meditates every day. They are ascendant on this other level.
Right.
And it's very easy for people, once they quiet themselves down and start honing in on a singular voice, to really start feeling like I am in connection with this person. Right. And I, all of a sudden I have these answers. And then you actually stop looking in a weird way. You stop looking inward. You start inward and you start looking outward. It's like a weird thing. You start in, but then it becomes all about the out. And then the negative part starts surfacing, about you lose yourself in that. And I think that's an interesting aspect of it, I think.
Totally. That's so, yeah, this is true. It's this dichotomy. I love it. Yeah, it's like you're taught to look inward. It sort of works. Something shifts. And then you're like, this must be the answer. So you start to look inward. And then the inward doesn't quite fit, but you're still made some weird connection in the mind. Like, okay, but outward is the solution. Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. Not to, you know, and then it is reinforced by the community. You know, you see, I've a lot in communities. It's like the master has said it.
Yes.
Just follow. Gosh, many of us really want to get it, right? Like we want to get well. We want to do it. So then we're like, all right, I guess I'll just keep following it.
Yeah, most definitely. And I think it's the presentation of something. Like my personal presentation of meditation has always been a very positive, well-meaning thing. But sometimes I think when something, let's say new in this case, because it's relatively new, like you said, for 60 years, sometimes we overgeneralize the benefit of something without analyzing what are the potential issues with this. It's like you mentioned with exercise. Exercise is very good, but it does have a diminishing returns point where it's, if you do this too much, which is not generally an issue with most of the population, but there is a percentage of people that does happen.
Right.
It exhibits the same negative outcomes as being sedentary.
Right.
So I would think that meditation may have a similar stimulus response. What's the correct dosage for meditation?
Exactly.
And is it even right for you? The more nuanced attitude of like, well, I should actually look at this on a larger scale and see, is this for me?
Yeah. Yes, totally. I totally agree with that. It is, and also to look at, I do think, maybe that's because of my conditioning to love meditation, that it's a little bit like exercise. Like some movement is good, right? Like in general. And I think some way of accessing a sense of connection and calm, for most of us, it's helpful. But it doesn't have to take the form of sitting down with closed eyes, cross legs, and looking at your experience. It can be dancing, it can be movement, it can be, you know, listening to sounds, it can be taking walks in the forest, it can, you know, and also it can be very specific meditations. Maybe for some people, like, you know, with exercises too, right? Like for some people, they probably react better to certain types, high intensity, low intensity, like low impact, high impact. And meditation too, like you can have meditations that are very much about honing in concentration, and that can create, you know, a super sharp mind, but it can really unbalance if you're already tense. And then there's others like you can just develop loving kindness and this sense of gentleness. And some people will just fall asleep with that and be like, others will just, it will be so nourishing. So I think it's also about finding the dosage is huge. I think the dosage is huge. And the, let's say, technique or the type of exercise. And it can shift, you know, it can be. Somebody taught me, and I will let you know some resources that maybe can go in the show notes, because some of this I've learned also from others. But the way to look at sometimes upregulation is needed. So like when there's more a depressive state and a sense of just lethargy and down, is sometimes doing a type of meditation, which is a bit more concentration, more active, can be helpful. And then other times, down regulation, you know, when you're just super hyped, which I think most of us go in that direction this day. It's like, okay, meditations that are very gentle, that don't require a lot of effort, that might be relaxation, that might be movement. Sometimes looking around, you know, looking at trees. This can be such a sense of presence with one's experience without it triggering these reactions.
Yeah, it's I'm glad you mentioned like the type of meditation. Mm-hmm. I've always been a big proponent of that meditation could be a variety of things. Like for me, when I do my podcast, it feels very meditative to me. Mm-hmm. Like the connection with another person, staring at them, having this uninterrupted time, and I get into a flow. So like when I interview someone and I'm listening, you start thinking to yourself, how often do I actually do this on a regular basis with another person? Now, if you ask most people, hardly ever.
Yes. Right?
But to me, it's meditative, or I enjoy high intensity exercise. I feel like when I get into the flow, like Csikszentmihalyi mm-hmm. talks about the flow state, it's a form of meditation where time slows down, things get bigger. Like it's there's different ways to enter that state. But I think we've kind of eat, pray, loved our way into meditation.
Right. Yes.
So Julia Roberts sitting in a place with her hands out, and like that's how you meditate. But that's just one version. And I think we've pop culture has socialized us into a very singular version of meditation. That is not for everyone.
I agree. I agree. And it's also made us think of meditation as a very separate thing from life.
Yes.
I love this. As you were saying, I thought, it gave me the goosebumps. Like as a podcast, you know, you're giving this service, you're creating this spaciousness to talk about deep things and to bring, it's a practice of presence, right? Like here we are opening a space for our inner world to express in this uninterrupted way. And same with movement. I love sometimes there are these things also, like for me, movement in nature, this can be such a beautiful experience. And I think we lose a little bit the sense, what is meditation really about, rather than how it is done? It is about, well, it's all kinds of things. Of course, you can say it's to reach nirvana, ultimate enlightenment.
Sure.
And I've heard some people who are very awakened, and that's good. But for most of us mortals here, we want to have a sense of connection with our environment, of well-being, of feeling ease, of feeling whole, of learning to be at peace with ourselves, with our different parts. And this can come through so many different ways. This can come in many different ways. I have a teacher who I love him very much. He's a man in England. He's this mystic, you know, he sits in meditation every day in a church randomly.
Yeah.
But he said the other day, like, I don't know if what I do is deeper than what I did as a child striking my dog, you know. He was comparing, like, this was as much presence for him Yeah.
Well, this is kind of a big question. I don't know. It just popped in my head. That's just how this podcast goes whenever I talk to people. Like, what is this conflict we're trying to grapple with within ourselves?
Yeah, that's... Gosh, there's some... in my experience, yeah, these are like, oh my God.
Big question.
Talk about it in the ultimate way and in the more general. But I think the way I'm looking at it now and when I'm working with people, many of us have a deep, deep conflict between our parts. You know, it's almost like we have a... Hard to put it like that, but we're conflicted. We have thoughts that we know we shouldn't have, but we still have them. We have habits that we have, but we think we shouldn't have them. And there we have conflicts. And especially now that many of us are really aware of ourselves, we've done already some inner work, and we know, like, oh, I shouldn't be resentful, but I'm resentful. And so there is a sense of not being able to integrate all of these parts and look at their, you know, their gifts and the ways that they can promote some things in us and ways to also navigate it. I also do think connection is a big thing. Like, and I mean connection in the most basic way, in the sense that I do think our culture is pretty messed up. I don't know. I don't want to say like in the past, everything was perfect. I don't know. But I do have the sense that we are not connected with ourselves, right? So maybe that's a way of explaining it. Like, we're not connected. We have this war inside of like, oh, what should I do? But what I actually do? But then there's also with others and this sense of, a teacher was saying recently, like, we can hardly look into each other's eyes. You know, it's like, yeah, we can really actually do that. And then not to mention the environment, what's happening now with the environment, like we cannot connect to our environment. And
yeah,
if one thinks, I do have a spiritual tinge to, for me, I don't know if others, if it's relevant for others, but also to spirit, to whatever it's bigger than us, to a sense of something that transcends our human limited experience. And yeah, I think that sense of disconnect is also, you know, if when we do have it, it does add a lot to our quality of life.
Yeah, I think that last part is something that resonates with me quite a bit. I think that humans struggle with kind of this mind-body connection,
right,
and this connection to the physical world. And that you see and feel and taste and touch and smell. And then this very strange, whether you have whatever your spiritual connection may be, this very strange ethereal connection to a greater thing that is not human in you. And I think there's this war inside of like reconciling the, how can both of these things exist in me? And this conflict of kind of this very spiritual, I don't know how to explain it, like this, whatever you believe in, this almost very cosmic, spiritual realm of living that is beyond your current physical existence. I think we struggle with that to understand it, which is why I think so much of history has been about those things, religion, history, spirituality, the physical presence on earth, this kind of this dealing with the infinity of our existence versus the very finite version of our existence here. I think it's just a constant struggle. And I think this is where meditation becomes very good and very difficult, because all of a sudden you start tapping into those two worlds. They come together. It's confusing. It's very confusing.
Totally. I was having a hard time how to put that into an actual explanation because I didn't know, like, should I go more esoteric? Should I keep it only in the, you
say
know,
whatever. Or, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But this is what it is. It is not only things are happening. That's what I said in the beginning also, that I don't think we understand some of these things because we can look at the amygdala and the nervous system and trauma. And this is, I think it's a big part of it. But I do think there's another aspect to it, which is that we can tap into things that are bigger and that can be great. You know, this sense of, wow, I'm not this body only. I'm not this crazy things. There is something more profound about me, some more transcendent. But sometimes these insights, like, we just don't know what we're playing with in a way.
Yes. You
know, insights can come and then we can feel totally dissociated. That's a big thing. Like, somehow this derealization can come through because there is this two insights that don't, for some reason, due to, you know, not proper guidance or some things to be adjusted, they sort of come at the same time in some weird way in which you start to think like, oh, I'm not just this body, you know, there's something about me. But then it's like, oh, I'm not this body, who am I? I'm not this body, you know, and then this sense of this is scary. And people speak about it as dissociation, like suddenly they feel they're outside of the body and they sort of don't know where are they, because this becomes very subtle experiences. And the weird thing is that then you'll have some teachers say, great, your energy has opened. You're now in contact with the, you know, so many. But there are some teachers who will just take it like that. And it's like, now you're seeing, and people are like in dread sitting there. And that's just not the point of meditation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think what's interesting too is I've observed this. I don't know how this come across, but it's my podcast. I'm going to say it. But I think a lot of times, like, the people who have really no, let's say, spiritual religious background, but they feel this inkling to want to have spirituality, when they tap into meditation or any form of thing like that, you're kind of tapping into a very similar realm of existence. Mm-hmm. And that could be scary, because then you may start thinking, well, maybe there is more to me than what I thought. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's not actually too dissimilar to different branches of spirituality in the sense of tapping into a higher power or a higher version of yourself, which I actually kind of believe that most humans are very much pulled towards in some version, whatever that it is. And it could be scary if you've never had that experience at all in your life. And that could be whether that's traumatic or bringing up traumatic memories and things of that nature. But I think, like, we are fascinated with what happens to us after we die, or near-death experiences, or why does this thing feel, what's this connection I feel in my stomach about something, and this feeling I have with another person on another side of the world. Mm-hmm. I don't think these things are mistakes. I think they're part of the conflict that you're working through in your life. Mm-hmm. To merge these two things together. And how do I connect myself to this other aspect, a much higher version of myself, and link that to the physical version of myself and exist and feel content about that?
Yes, I think that's the journey. Some people talk about embodiment, embodied spirituality. Like, how do you still have your body, you know, you're still this person. Like, how can you have both? Like, you're still this person with this personality, with this taste, neurosis, wisdom. Yeah. At the same time, you are this more transcendent being or spirit, you
That's
know,
exactly
something.
Right.
And then,
like,
how
to embrace it, like, you know,
exactly. How to embrace it and how to make those insights come gently, you know, how to make it, like, in a way that it's a slow, gradual process. I don't know that it can be perfect, but I do know there are issues when people are told, oh, let's meditate to reduce stress, you know, and you're sitting there like, okay, I didn't sign up for any spiritual awakening. I just want to be more productive at work and sit. And suddenly you're like, whoa, this state of presence, it's making me shaky. Like, maybe I'm not who I think I am. And suddenly this can be destabilizing. So I yes, it is important to tell people what they're getting into in a way.
Yeah, that's right. Because I think, you know, while our current society pushes productivity and being productive, and I think we're in a crisis of overproductivity and overstimulation. And this is, I think, driving a lot of the desire to get into things like meditation to quiet your existence a little bit. But the catch is that you may just want to be quieting yourself a little bit, but you're going to tap into a frequency more than likely that you didn't decide to turn a radio dial towards that. But it's almost impossible. You're going to tap into something. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think like there should be some disclaimer about that. To say, hey, listen, if you want to meditate, that's great. You want to go to yoga and stuff, but there's a chance that you may be tapping into something that you didn't intend to.
Yes. Oh, I so agree with that. I had a friend who was saying something like that, like, disclaimer, you don't know where you might be going. What is, you know, in this rabbit hole, you might really be.
All right.
And it's some of us. Also, that's what we want. Yeah. But you say that connection between this toxic productivity that we have going on and the fact that some of us want to meditate to calm down so that we can be more productive. It's almost like I can really now show up.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is that one can bring this hyper goal-oriented productivity to meditation itself. That's one of the things I work at quite a lot with my clients, because it's very hard when you have this drive and then you sit and it's like, let me get the goal of it. You know, you're also sitting there and that cranks up the system so much. And then you combine that with what you're saying, which is that when we tap into presence, when we tap into that sense of us being part of something bigger, like you say, I don't know, probably if one is more Christian, one can say, I communed with Jesus, or right. If one is more Buddhist, one can experience some transcendent non-duality. Like, there's different forms. It's a very, I don't know. I don't have enough wisdom to figure out whether it's the same or different, but I know it's something profound. And then, you might, exactly, like that might not be what you're looking for. And even if it is what you're looking for, it is, this is something I want to say, that this idea that we can, even an enlightenment or spiritual awakening of whatever extent in our culture, we kind of think that whole thing of no pain, no gain, you know, no pain, no gain. So it's almost like if it's really hard, I'm going through the dark night of the soul, I'm just like purifying my karma. And it, in truth, is there might be some painful moments in life, but meditation should ideally be a very gradual unfolding process. Yeah. It's held in this community, in a community, preferably with a kind teacher, with a sense of no shame. You know, if you need to step back and do something else, you're still, you know, that's great. That's what you're doing now. That's what works for you. And integrating those insights little by little. I think now this is what I think a spiritual journey ought to be, you know, not this huge, let's fight against our demons and get through it, but rather let's move slowly, you know, let's move safely, let's be kind. After all, what is spirit? I don't know what it is, but it's certainly, I want to connect it to something kind and loving. And that disclaimer, are you ready?
Just telling you a disclaimer. Well, we're not good at that as humans. We tend to create things or jump into things, and we deal with the consequences of our actions later, which is a massive flaw that we do because we don't understand our creations. And this is always told in stories throughout history or in science fiction. And we're dealing with this now in AI, as we, you know, I always think it's kind of a funny reference, but the movie Jurassic Park and the actor Jeff Goldblum, and he says, you know, you spend so much time trying to figure out if you could do this, you never slow down to think, should we do this? Right. And this is the folly of humans, is we very rarely think about, should we do something? We just kind of do it.
And, right.
You know, and there's a positive to being impulsive, but it's just, my whole thing is like looking at the whole picture of something. And mm-hmm. what would it look like if you went into meditation with a disclaimer?
Right.
And results may be negative or positive.
Yeah.
And I just don't think we do that. We just present a side that makes us feel good about ourselves. Mm-hmm. And then it's just like social media. Let's present a side that makes us look good, mm-hmm. but never mm-hmm. really talk about the reality of what it means to live and the difficulties of it. And it's so I think we've overrepresented what meditation is in this mm-hmm. very overly kind of poppy version of it. And mm-hmm. we have not provided a full representation that, you know, results may vary.
Yeah.
More of that.
Right. Handle with care.
Handle with care. Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's what interested me about you. I was like, all right, this seems like a results with care. Like, hey, let's pump the brakes a little bit.
Yeah.
And I just think I want to have a much more nuanced conversation about anything.
Yeah.
And
right.
meditation is the same way. Or we have the tendency to do the same thing with negative things, all negative, very negative, and not see that they're okay. Results vary. There is a positive situation to other things that may be somewhat negative as well.
Yeah. So that's true. It's black and white thinking is. Yeah. Yeah, like you said, AI, I mean, that's huge. Should we be doing?
You don't think? No one thinks about it that way, you know? And I think humans crave certainty, right? If we give it this certainty stamp of approval or negative, we feel good. No one wants to be in the middle and think. No one wants to have things up in the air. That's normal.
Yeah, right?
You know, you want a decision. Tell me if this is good or bad. Well, it's really not that simple for some. Actually, a lot of things in life are very gray.
It's true. Yeah, totally. It is. And it's true. That's challenging for us humans, you know, for me, for most people. It's like, is it safe? Is it safe?
Yeah.
But that's where I think good guidance comes into play. And also what you mentioned, this wider idea, like imagine, I had the image, a world in which you go like to a teacher or to a group of teachers, like, I want to learn meditation. And they take their time. It's like, why? Why do you want to meditation? Okay. Why do you think meditation is what will take you there to what you're looking for? How much time are you willing to put into it? Like, are you, do you know that this could happen? Could we make sure that we stay in touch with each other, that you will actually tell me how things are going? Can we talk about your drug usage, your alcohol usage? It's also big. Like that actually, if you say, like if people go into that and they've had, you know, they're into psychedelics and think this, whoa, that's not a good combo.
Get the full information. I think life is best lived in many ways. And when you can only make the best decision when you look at the information that you have. But what if your information is only half information?
Yes.
And you owe it to yourself to get the full story on the decision, on the information that will make your decision on something. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like if you're looking at having a long-term relationship with someone or you're looking to get married, okay, you really need to look at what's the full weight of this, the potential downside and positive side. But in the end, you don't know what's going to happen. So you do have to take a leap of faith, but you at least want to have a lot of information.
That's true.
You know, but I think that this impulsive nature of trying things is good and bad with humans, is we're very impulsive. And we're like, we just make up stuff and then we do it. And it's like, oh, I didn't know that was going to be bad. And like, you know.
I know, we're like eternal teenagers, right? Like
let's give everybody access to each other in the world through these systems and stuff. What could go wrong? I mean, no, think about it. Oh no, you know, bullying, cyberbullying, you know, interference and different things. It's like, oh, it's not bad for our mental health. You know, but I don't even think, here's the thing I think with social media is interesting. When you think about the internet, was created by Tim Berners-Lee, the World Wide Web in 1990. I think on 1990. Mm-hmm. We're playing with technology. It was super recent. That's how many true. People sat down and thought to themselves, I wonder if this will be good for our mental health? I'm pretty sure no one sat down and said, because who was talking about mental health in the 90s? Seriously. Like,
right,
come on.
Right.
You know, it's like,
yes, it's true.
We never project ourselves to the future. We just make predictions about the future, but we never project ourselves to be in it. Yeah.
Yes, it's true. It's true. And then there's some of us, I don't know, it sounds like you were thinking about it. I couldn't put it into words back then. I have a daughter and I tried my best I'm not going to give her a smartphone. I waited until it was like almost, you know, like imminent. Because I thought, I'm going to wait because by the time I give it to her, I'm sure studies will have shown what I already kind of
You already said. Know.
Yeah. I couldn't put it into words, but then I was thinking somebody said it and I thought that's it. Like our nervous system didn't evolve. You know, it's evolved over thousands and thousands of years. It didn't evolve to take all that sensory input within seconds and minutes. Like with just... I know some of us like to think that we do, that it's fine, but in my opinion, as somebody who works with people, you know, mental health, etc., that's not true. Like we really still have a limited processing capacity. It can grow, can be a little more, but yeah, it's true. It's not dissimilar to meditation, right? Like we're putting some input.
Yes.
It's just like we have to work with it's almost like software and hardware.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
This is that my daughter's 12 and she just got a smartphone this year. We waited, you know, I wanted to wait as long as possible.
Yeah.
Because I had a lot of information at hand. And I'm like, okay, once I introduce this stimulus into your environment, there is going to be consequences. And then you have to build boundaries around the new stimulus that you put into your environment. And, you know, what you're talking about, especially is the mismatch paradox in that humans physically have not evolved that much over thousands of years. But then when you introduce the stimulus of technology, which literally evolves every second constantly, we will never catch up to the speed of technology. So we're living in this mismatched time with our physical selves, brain-wise, everything with the technology. And again, we never sat down and thought, maybe we're not conditioned for this. You know, we just do stuff.
I know.
It's, ethical innovation needs to happen. We need more ethical innovation.
Yes, totally. I think I was talking about that with my brother-in-law, actually, where I thought, at the end of the day, a lot of it has to do with ethics. It is because you cannot say it's good or it's bad. I mean, if there was no internet, we wouldn't be talking.
Sure,
there wouldn't be like all kinds of things. Oh, of course, it's great. But like without the real ethics of it, without this neoliberal, like, let's just exploit it. Let's make money. Let's say without that, it is really super dangerous. Super, especially technology. And I think I'm very sensitive to it. A lot of the people I work with have a sort of sensitive nervous system, etc. And ways to regulate it. And at first I thought, you know, during that time when meditation was happening, I thought, oh, I'm just too sensitive. But now I think it's more like we just notice things. It's not like it's good for anybody.
Exactly. It's not good for anybody. And I think just like the more stimulus you keep adding into your environment, it's more difficult to manage it. And I think this is part of I think it's very poorly presented by a lot of the people who are leaders in AI because they're not emotionally sensitive people.
Yes.
They're generally very engineer, techie type people. But they should be working with very emotionally sensitive humans and say like, listen, here's the thing. Like when you create this, you are the creator and people get attached to their creations. And so once you start because what's going to happen is these things will become more humanoid based, because we like to create things that look like us or that are simulate us. It's what we do. And then we're going to anthropomorphize a robot the same way we do a dog or a cat. And we're going to have feelings for it. We will. I'm telling you. And that's going to create another new entry of stimulus and complexity into the human existence. And we're not ready for that. We are not ready for that. So it's going to create more problems, but also more solutions at the same time. It's just that we're very focused on how we're overemphasizing the positive elements of it instead of going, maybe there's some of this that we should put some of the brakes on, because emotionally we're not ready to handle. And we just think of the productivity of AI, but we're not thinking of the emotion that there are going to be people who are not going to want to be around other people anymore, because they'd be like, well, my AI actually likes me better. And they cater to everything that I like, and they actually do what I want them to do. Right. So then they'll start creating weird kind of patriarchal relationships with their AI, and domineering relationships. And then what you see what I mean? You just keep adding layer to layer to layer. We are not prepared for that.
I think it's so freaky. I agree. As you were talking, I thought, imagine a world in which technology production would be like, you have a mental health professional, you have a spiritual guide, you have a sort of politician, you have an economist, and you sort of think like, hey, yes, it is possible. There's all kinds of possible things we can do, but how is it helpful? And how, because it is true. Like when I think of social media, and as we know, you know, some of these were kids who were inventing this thing.
Yeah, exactly. How would they know?
And they were, you know, techie guys who figured these things out, who then suddenly is like, whoa, we can make millions and millions and millions. And then, but then we come into the big thing, which is like, how are we organizing ourselves as a society, you know, based on.
It's never emotionally competent people creating things. It's all very math STEM related people who create things. I'm great for them, man. It's like they have a gift. But you know, that's just one side of being human. And maybe you have a gift in that. I just think the collaborative, I would love to see a collaborative process of building where an engineer worked with a spiritualist and some worked with someone in behavior modification and say, okay, we want to build something beautiful. We're not against technology, but there's going to be advance. We're never going to stop that. But can we implement certain things into it that are mindful of the pitfalls of what will happen? It will happen.
Right.
Things. It's like we're just creating at a faster pace every second.
Yes.
And we are potentially our own extinction event. We are potentially. And we're not aware of that. We're like oblivious to it. It's like, I could talk about this all day.
This is so mind-blowing. I still like...
It's scary, right?
I only
get start thinking about it too much, it gets a little scary. And that's kind of what meditation can be. You start thinking about your life too much, a little scary.
My mom says, if you look, you will find. And that goes for good things as well as bad things. You know, if you start to look... too much. But it's a little bit like what you said about technology. I just love these both topics are for me like, you know, a little different, but a little similar. And they keep me busy, both of them. But in sense of how amazing to have this technology also of the mind, to have things that we can do to open our hearts, to open our inside, to become present. There's so many different ways of working with the mind that I think most of us do want to grow in some way. In some way. It doesn't have to be meditation, but we have, I know that Carl Rogers, this, very famous psychologist, but he said most of us, or I think he said all of us, have this wish for growth, for transcendence, etc. But it does take care, you know, it does take care and it takes. These are not things to be taken super lightly.
Yeah. Because we're becoming techno-spiritual beings, you know, like we are. We're moving. We want our technology, but we want our spirituality too. We want something bigger. We're becoming techno-spiritual beings in a sense. We're growing towards that. I feel it very, very heavily.
Wow. Techno-spiritual. What do you mean by that? I never heard that term.
I just made it up, literally. I just feel like more than ever, my just observational research runs like, I've never seen more people seeking spirituality than I ever have now. But I've also never seen more people seeking technology than I ever have than now. And I think that's part of the conflict is this growth into these techno-spiritual beings that are trying to exist in this fast-paced, super technologically advanced society, but also grappling with our place beyond the stars and spiritually. And these two places, I think, can exist, but we got to slow down a little bit. It just came to me. I was like, I think that's kind of where we're headed, you know?
All right. This techno-spiritual, I love it because it's also, it includes this side of trying to make spirituality into something like what you said about technology, that it sort of serves us. So it's no longer, that's also another thing. Like it's no longer a process of opening the heart so that we can be more connected, be more to serve others but it's more like, oh, a type of spirituality where it serves me, where I become better. Yeah. And where I'm like, it's like the technology thing, what you were saying, like it mirrors humans. And now spirituality is more like, what does it mean to be transcendent? Oh, it must mean superhuman.
Yeah. Well, this is amazing, Christina. I felt very in the flow in this conversation. So good. Please tell everyone how they could learn more about your work and connect with you.
Thank you. Yes. Thanks for that. So my website is christinabonet.com. I'm sure we can put it in the notes. And I work with clients. I'm preparing now this program, which is called Unfold, which is part of the idea of gently unfolding, you know, and finding way. It's a 3-month program, so I'll be posting about that in my website. And the idea exactly is to find ways, how can we grow? How can we really grow emotionally, spiritually, become kind individuals safely in fun ways that might include all sorts of different modalities, healthy ones, of course. So I look forward to meeting some of you there.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Christina. I really appreciate it. And we will be in touch.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much. All right, Ryan. Ciao.